This is Anglia Examinations, England. Listening Examination. Level 2, Paper FF Proficiency 120. Instructions. Listen to the recording and answer the questions. You will hear each part of the recording twice. There will be a pause before each part so you can read the questions. There will be other pauses to let you think about your answers. When you hear the tone, you should write your answers on the question paper. Write clearly in the spaces provided. You must ask any questions now as you cannot speak during the test. Listen to the first part of the test.
Section L1. You will hear a tour guide talking about Battle Abbey in the UK. For questions 1 to 4, listen to the recording and tick the correct box. For questions 5 to 12, fill in the missing information.
Follow me, everyone. Now, what you see before you is the impressive Battle Abbey, which is located where one of the most significant battles in Britain's history took place. That battle was not to be equaled in significance until that of Bosworth and the rise of the Tudor dynasty. Yes, the Battle of Hastings and the date 1066 truly does resonate with everyone in this country. William the Conqueror, who won that battle, built the abbey to commemorate his great victory here in that famous year. Although not technically a castle, it bears similarities to some. Glamis, a long way away in Scotland. But also Pevensey Castle, which is almost up the road from here. For those of you who've come all the way from Stirling, you'll also see some similarities to the castle there. Now, some facts about the abbey. For one, a lack of evidence of the battle was found under the castle during careful excavations. No armour or skeletons or anything like that. This has led some to say that this is not the exact site, but the texts of the time confirm that it is, or it must be. What really happened is that everything was cleared away by William in order to build the abbey, and to stop looters stealing from the site and selling what they found, which has always been a big problem throughout history. Now, William himself was, of course, Norman, and the abbey was a Norman one, built in the Norman style. Today, not much of the building is original. Parts over there, the very damaged part, you see. It has been restored multiple times, most notably in the Tudor period, which constitutes the majority of what you're looking at, with just a few parts remaining from the Plantagenet period after the Normans. Now, come over here and you'll see some... On the eastern side is the cloister, later partly adapted as a residence by successive abbots, ensuring its survival as a country home after 1538. Its current use is as a school. OK, I'll let you all go and take a look around by yourselves now. But if you want more information, you can pick up an audio guide at the front desk. They don't cost any money and are included in the ticket price. Oh, the managers asked me to tell you that you can take as many photos as you like, but no drones, please. People have been using them recently, and you need special permission. OK, it's 3 p.m. now. We'll meet back at the gift shop near the cafe at 5 o'clock. A lot of you have asked about the Antiques Roadshow. This is a popular TV programme in the UK. It's held at a different English heritage site every week, and soon it'll be at Battle Abbey. People from round the country come in order to find out more about their dusty old antiques and get them valued. Experts specialise in different objects like jewellery and vases. There are, however, no specialists in the fields of stamps or coins, but all of the general antiques valuers would be prepared to look at them. Entry to the Antiques Roadshow is free for everyone. If you're only coming to observe, you can show up without online confirmation. However, if you wish to get something valued, then please register the item on the BBC website. You'll be given an appointment time. No other type of booking is required, but you must do this if you wish to have your item looked at. This will be an all-day event and will take place from 9:30 until 5 p.m. The event will take place on the 9th of July, a Tuesday, and will air in a few months' time, on Sunday, November the 15th. There is a list of frequently asked questions on the website, but if you'd like to get in touch, please use the email shareyourstory@bbc.co.uk. I must tell you that the email antiquesroadshow@bbc.co.uk isn't a genuine email. Many emails go to this address, which does not exist, so please be careful.
Now listen to the first part of the test again.
Follow me, everyone. Now, what you see before you is the impressive Battle Abbey, which is located where one of the most significant battles in Britain's history took place. That battle was not to be equaled in significance until that of Bosworth and the rise of the Tudor dynasty. Yes, the Battle of Hastings, and the date 1066, truly does resonate with everyone in this country. William the Conqueror, who won that battle, built the abbey to commemorate his great victory here in that famous year. Although not technically a castle, it bears similarities to some. Glamis, a long way away in Scotland. But also Pevensey Castle, which is almost up the road from here. For those of you who've come all the way from Stirling, you'll also see some similarities to the castle there. Now, some facts about the abbey. For one, a lack of evidence of the battle was found under the castle during careful excavations. No armour or skeletons or anything like that. This has led some to say that this is not the exact site, but the texts of the time confirm that it is, or it must be. What really happened is that everything was cleared away by William in order to build the abbey, and to stop looters stealing from the site and selling what they found, which has always been a big problem throughout history. Now, William himself was, of course, Norman, and the abbey was a Norman one, built in the Norman style. Today, not much of the building is original. Parts over there, the very damaged part, you see. It has been restored multiple times, most notably in the Tudor period, which constitutes the majority of what you're looking at, with just a few parts remaining from the Plantagenet period after the Normans. Now, come over here and you'll see some... On the eastern side is the cloister, later partly adapted as a residence by successive abbots, ensuring its survival as a country home after 1538. Its current use is as a school. OK, I'll let you all go and take a look around by yourselves now. But if you want more information, you can pick up an audio guide at the front desk. They don't cost any money and are included in the ticket price. Oh, the managers asked me to tell you that you can take as many photos as you like, but no drones, please. People have been using them recently and you need special permission. OK, it's 3 p.m. now. We'll meet back at the gift shop near the cafe at 5 o'clock. A lot of you have asked about the Antiques Roadshow. This is a popular TV programme in the UK. It's held at a different English heritage site every week, and soon it'll be at Battle Abbey. People from round the country come in order to find out more about their dusty old antiques and get them valued. Experts specialise in different objects like jewellery and vases. There are, however, no specialists in the fields of stamps or coins, but all of the general antiques valuers would be prepared to look at them. Entry to the Antiques Roadshow is free for everyone. If you're only coming to observe, you can show up without online confirmation. However, if you wish to get something valued, then please register the item on the BBC website. You'll be given an appointment time. No other type of booking is required, but you must do this if you wish to have your item looked at. This will be an all-day event and will take place from 9:30 until 5 p.m. The event will take place on the 9th of July, a Tuesday, and will air in a few months' time, on Sunday, November the 15th. There is a list of frequently asked questions on the website, but if you'd like to get in touch, please use the email shareyourstory@bbc.co.uk. I must tell you that the email antiquesroadshow@bbc.co.uk isn't a genuine email. Many emails go to this address, which does not exist, so please be careful. Now listen to the second part of the test. Section L2. You are going to hear four speakers talking about time. For questions 1 to 8, choose the correct answer, A, B, C or D. Speaker 1.
I work a 9-to-5 job, so I have evenings free. My garden needs some attention, and I really want it to look good in the spring, but I don't have the energy after work. I bought a television recently, but it's just a screen. I can't hook any channels up to it yet. I just use it to play my games console, and I tend to do that. I feel like I should be reading or something, but it's just too much effort, and this is such good fun. I'm always so tired after work. My dad got me a guitar for Christmas in the hope I'll follow in his footsteps. I don't even think I've picked it up. I've always wanted to be able to speak German, so I've got a leaflet about adult education evening classes. My friend's doing drawing, but I was put off that by school art lessons. The same goes for the team sports we had to play at school. I must find that leaflet and ring them.
Speaker 2.
It would be wrong to describe myself as being overworked, but there's always plenty to do and never a dull moment. I can plan my week as it usually follows a pattern, but I'd never say it became monotonous. I have an active week, so I like to relax on Saturday and Sundays. What am I going to do this weekend? Well, I've been invited on a day out walking in the countryside, and you might think I couldn't say no to that. But I can't be bothered. So I'm going to do what I do best and sit in front of a couple of the latest movies. I don't have any food in the fridge, but the supermarket can wait. I can order in some takeaways. No need for me to waste any time in the kitchen. I've got some serious work I really need to get on with. That is, sitting down and relaxing.
Speaker 3.
I don't have any free time. I'm busy every day. Even at weekends, I need to get on with my work. If I want to get a good job in the future, I need to put everything into the upcoming exams. It's so stressful. I don't know how anyone with kids does it. There's someone on my course who has two, and it baffles me how they fit it all in. Luckily, the house is fairly new, as I'd never get any painting or DIY done. Anyway, I'm moving soon. I recently had a weekend away with some friends. It had been booked in for ages, and I'd really have let them down if I'd cancelled. I'd been working so hard in the lead-up to the trip, I worried I'd burn myself out, but I just couldn't lose that nervous energy. I was always checking my emails, concerned about things back home. I must have been dull company. I just couldn't switch off.
Speaker 4.
I'm writing a book and need to get my manuscript to my publisher within a fortnight. I plucked up the courage to ask for an extra week, which wasn't easy for me. I've had some family health issues, but they've said there's no leeway. Mum says they're being really cold-blooded about it, but I see their point. I accepted the work and the conditions. They have their own deadlines, and I'm a factor in that. It's hard, but I'll do it. I've always thrived under pressure, and in fact, it's the only way I can really work. I never find deadlines a pain. In fact, when there isn't a deadline, I just put things off. I need that looming threat there to help me get on with things. Otherwise, I'm easily distracted. Some people say they can't work or think with the feeling of someone looking over their shoulder, but that's not me.
Now listen to the second part of the test again. Speaker 1.
I work a 9-to-5 job, so I have evenings free. My garden needs some attention, and I really want it to look good in the spring, but I don't have the energy after work. I bought a television recently, but it's just a screen. I can't hook any channels up to it yet. I just use it to play my games console, and I tend to do that. I feel like I should be reading or something, but it's just too much effort, and this is such good fun. I'm always so tired after work. My dad got me a guitar for Christmas in the hope I'll follow in his footsteps. I don't even think I've picked it up. I've always wanted to be able to speak German, so I've got a leaflet about adult education evening classes. My friend's doing drawing, but I was put off that by school art lessons. The same goes for the team sports we had to play at school. I must find that leaflet and ring them.
Speaker 2.
It would be wrong to describe myself as being overworked. But there's always plenty to do and never a dull moment. I can plan my week as it usually follows a pattern, but I'd never say it became monotonous. I have an active week, so I like to relax on Saturday and Sundays. What am I going to do this weekend? Well, I've been invited on a day out walking in the countryside, and you might think I couldn't say no to that, but I can't be bothered. So I'm going to do what I do best and sit in front of a couple of the latest movies. I don't have any food in the fridge, but the supermarket can wait. I can order in some takeaways. No need for me to waste any time in the kitchen. I've got some serious work I really need to get on with. That is, sitting down and relaxing.
Speaker 3.
I don't have any free time. I'm busy every day. Even at weekends, I need to get on with my work. If I want to get a good job in the future, I need to put everything into the upcoming exams. It's so stressful. I don't know how anyone with kids does it. There's someone on my course who has two, and it baffles me how they fit it all in. Luckily, the house is fairly new, as I'd never get any painting or DIY done. Anyway, I'm moving soon. I recently had a weekend away with some friends. It had been booked in for ages, and I'd really have let them down if I'd cancelled. I'd been working so hard in the lead-up to the trip, I worried I'd burn myself out, but I just couldn't lose that nervous energy. I was always checking my emails, concerned about things back home. I must have been dull company. I just couldn't switch off.
Speaker 4.
I'm writing a book and need to get my manuscript to my publisher within a fortnight. I plucked up the courage to ask for an extra week, which wasn't easy for me. I've had some family health issues, but they've said there's no leeway. Mum says they're being really cold-blooded about it, but I see their point. I accepted the work and the conditions. They have their own deadlines, and I'm a factor in that. It's hard, but I'll do it. I've always thrived under pressure, and in fact, it's the only way I can really work. I never find deadlines a pain. In fact, when there isn't a deadline, I just put things off. I need that looming threat there to help me get on with things. Otherwise, I'm easily distracted. Some people say they can't work or think with the feeling of someone looking over their shoulder, but that's not me.
Now listen to the third part of the test. Section L3. You are going to listen to an interview with Steve Bennett, whose company makes rockets. Answer all the questions below by marking the correct box with a tick.
Our guest today is Steve Bennett, who makes rockets with a small group of volunteers for his own private company called Star Chaser. Steve, why do you make rockets?
Well, we've been going longer than Elon Musk, the founder of SpaceX, but we have less money. I've always had a dream of space travel becoming like budget airlines within everyone's means. That's what I work towards. I think the interest is already there with the public, especially with the younger generation. The first person who will land on Mars has already been born, and we're at a new frontier of space travel.
Fascinating. And the current rocket you're building is called Nova 2, right?
Yes. Nova took 2 years of preparation, but only a few weeks to build. It will be able to take people right up to the edge of the atmosphere, where they will float in the pod for a few minutes and then return to Earth. After several days of training, that is. That's at least 7 hours a day. In future, everybody can be an astronaut.
And how did you get into making rockets?
I've been obsessed with them since I was little. Perhaps surprisingly, I never got along with sci-fi space films. I wanted to know what's actually there. My mum let me stay up to watch the moon landings in 1969. From then on, I was hooked, and within 6 months, obsessed. Luckily, my science teacher was very supportive and really helped me discover things.
So, when did you build your first rocket?
Well, I was 12 at the time of the moon landings, and it was shortly after that. So at 14, I was building rudimentary rockets to entertain my friends. Not to brag, but they weren't bicarbonate of soda science fair type things, but pretty advanced. I went to university at 18 and learned to build better rockets. That's when my career started, really.
We've always left it to the US and Russia, but you're trying to change this with your rocket Nova 2, right? And didn't your other rocket, Skybolt 2, achieve a record as well?
Yes, I can't claim to be the first British rocket builder, but no British rocket has ever reached the size, capability and success of our Skybolt 2, launched in 2017. Black Arrow, the British rocket launched in 1971, although nearly 5 metres longer in terms of height, didn't match Skybolt 2 in overall size. I really hope people come and join me in making Nova 2 a big deal.
So do we. Thank you, Steve.
Now listen to the third part of the test again.
Our guest today is Steve Bennett, who makes rockets with a small group of volunteers for his own private company called Star Chaser. Steve, why do you make rockets?
Well, we've been going longer than Elon Musk, the founder of SpaceX, but we have less money. I've always had a dream of space travel becoming like budget airlines within everyone's means. That's what I work towards. I think the interest is already there with the public, especially with the younger generation. The first person who will land on Mars has already been born, and we're at a new frontier of space travel.
Fascinating. And the current rocket you're building is called Nova 2, right?
Yes. Nova took 2 years of preparation, but only a few weeks to build. It will be able to take people right up to the edge of the atmosphere, where they will float in the pod for a few minutes and then return to Earth. After several days of training, that is. That's at least 7 hours a day. In future, everybody can be an astronaut.
And how did you get into making rockets?
I've been obsessed with them since I was little. Perhaps surprisingly, I never got along with sci-fi space films. I wanted to know what's actually there. My mum let me stay up to watch the moon landings in 1969. From then on, I was hooked, and within 6 months, obsessed. Luckily, my science teacher was very supportive and really helped me discover things.
So, when did you build your first rocket?
Well, I was 12 at the time of the moon landings, and it was shortly after that. So at 14, I was building rudimentary rockets to entertain my friends. Not to brag, but they weren't bicarbonate of soda science fair type things, but pretty advanced. I went to university at 18 and learned to build better rockets. That's when my career started, really.
We've always left it to the US and Russia, but you're trying to change this with your rocket Nova 2, right? And didn't your other rocket, Skybolt 2, achieve a record as well?
Yes, I can't claim to be the first British rocket builder, but no British rocket has ever reached the size, capability and success of our Skybolt 2, launched in 2017. Black Arrow, the British rocket launched in 1971, although nearly 5 metres longer in terms of height, didn't match Skybolt 2 in overall size. I really hope people come and join me in making Nova 2 a big deal.
So do we. Thank you, Steve.
That is the end of the listening test. You will now have 3 minutes to check your answers. Your listening paper will then be collected.